Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
What's up, everyone? I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by Kellen Olson. This is the Empire of the Suns podcast. We come to you on a Friday, where we're going to first tip off here by talking about most recent news updates. Let's see. Isaiah Cannon's back. Quick thoughts.
Training camp body. Good to see him come back. They were always open that he was going to be able to use their facilities and stuff throughout the rest of the year and the offseason and everything, and that's where he has been. So it's no surprise to see him come back. It's not a guaranteed deal or anything. It's a training camp contract, essentially, from what I saw with the reporting. And he is going to compete for a roster spot. There's a weird kind of space right now where there's still a two-way contract available. So maybe, I don't even know if it's someone's going to tweet at us and correct me on this and let me know. But can they turn Shaquille Harrison into a two-way contract? Because he's under the contract he's under right now, right?
They would have to waive him, and he have to be down with it, I feel like.
Yeah. That's
I feel like he's beyond that.
I do, too. So unless Isaiah Cannon wants a two-way contract, is he too old?
I don't even know if they're eligible.
Experience? Yeah, exactly. So I don't think there's really an opening for him at the moment. I think everyone listening agrees they should keep Shaq Harrison over him. He has a unique skill. Isaiah Cannon's is kind of – and his skill would just be experience, I guess. He's a decent shooter, but – he was fine at times for what they needed, which was they were desperate for point guards.
Suns odds, what? ESPN was projecting 28.5 wins. Bovada, Las Vegas, all those people were around 27.5, 28.5. Pretty, as usual, tough to say that that's not correct.
Yeah, we're not going to get into it and talk about it as a talking point because we've done it a lot, but I just wrote a thing that if Devin Booker averages 25-5-5, which he was very, very, very close to doing last year, and people forget last year that he was injured for a good amount of that time as well, and the team was, I believe the number I got was 14-20, when he was healthy, pretty much, and then he had the rumored, which is what I will say about it, the rumored hand injury that started in mid-January and then crept up even more towards the end of the year. They were still 14-20 because he was playing that high level of basketball, and if he averages 25-5-5, that's at a point in statistics where a guy is almost too good for his team to be bad, and that was essentially the question I asked, is like, is Vegas, should Vegas bump the win total just to like 30.5 just to make sure? Because if he averages 25-5-5 or better, I think this team can easily win 30, 31, 32 games. And they have them around 28.5 right now is what I've seen the number at mostly. And I just think it should be like two wins higher.
Plus, on that point alone. That, this team has more dudes, like, I don't care if they're young, they're more NBA talent level guys on it. So, yeah, that's fair. What else has been going on?
Schedule came out.
Oh, yeah.
Opening,
that was today.
Opening night, Luka versus DeAndre. We actually get to see it now. We got robbed at Summer League because Luka Doncic did something like just playing basketball for 18 straight months. What a wuss.
Yeah. An American wouldn't do that.
Oh, boy. He said it, not me. That's really exciting because there's just a lot of different nuggets involved in there because Brandon Knight's first game back is going to be against Dennis Smith Jr., who is both sides of the paradigm, I think. It's someone that he's going to have to really manage and defend well, but at the same time is someone he should outplay if he's going to play at the level we hope he does. DeAndre Jordan mixed with guys like Smith. Smith, the most underrated thing about him leading up to the draft for me was his passing and his vision. He can see a lot. And then, of course, Luka Doncic, we have to explain that. He will be rim-running all the time on this team in Rick Carlisle's system, and DeAndre Ayton is going to have to manage that. So that's a fun little matchup there. And then, of course, Jordan defending Ayton as well.
Josh Jackson defending Doncic. Or TJ Warren. Who knows?
Or TJ Warren or Trevor Ariza could guard him. And if TJ starts, TJ could just be on Dirk. They could do something like that as well. It's a fun little matchup there. And it's a team they can beat, most importantly, too. So it could be a step in the right direction, or it could be like that Kings game from 2 or 3 years ago. what was the opening night with Knight and Bledsoe again? Who was it against? It was against Dallas. It was the Raymond Felton. Who was the other guard?
I was like, this wasn't that bad.
It was two washed guards in the backcourt. It was Raymond Felton and Devin Harris, maybe. I don't
think it was.
I just remember we were relatively excited because that was like even the year before, 35 wins or whatever. They were in the hunt for a playoff spot with Isaiah Thomas and all the trades happened. We came back last year and we're like, okay, let's see how it looks now that everyone's healthy. And they just get smacked by the Mavericks. Oh, good times. Anything else stand out to you about the schedule? You wrote a little dealio for the website.
Most everything's, a lot of stuff is Ayton based. I don't care what you say. I want to see the Warriors. The Jazz will be fun just because the Kokoschkov connection. I want to see if Bledsoe's good under Mike Budenholzer, and LeBron coming to Phoenix in the first week of the season is going to be fun. If not only just, I'm curious to see if the Suns fans will show up. Like, I'm kind of worried. Like, if you've ever been to a LeBron game when he's with Cleveland or a LeBron game with Miami, there are not Miami or Cleveland fans in Phoenix. Those are just LeBron fans. And then when you factor in, people know more that Los Angeles fans tend to be in Phoenix already.
It's the triple
threat. Combine that. It's Suns fans, it might be like...
They're going to be outnumbered. Lakers fans are going to dominate those games. 100%.
I would say if you're a Suns fan, I would show up because it's going to be fun anyway. You might as well if you're going to choose a game, so probably do that.
It's the triple threat of Lakers fans who are, there are a lot of great basketball fans that are Laker fans, and you're saying, well, they're bandwagoners. Well, I think everyone's a bandwagoner who doesn't have a team. So, like, I'm wearing a Manchester United jersey right now. And
have
like,
you ever been across the pond?
Yeah, like, have I ever been to Manchester? No. Do I like Manchester United because they have a lot of the best players in the world? Yes. Like, that's kind of how it works for a lot of casual fans and even diehard fans who were growing up. They just like the Magic teams or they like the Kobe teams, and now they're Laker fans. That's just how it works. A lot of great Laker fans, and then there are a lot of not so great Laker fans who only like the Lakers when they're good, and now they have this guy named LeBron James who is good. And oh yeah, there is an entire, and I did not realize this until LeBron was in his, like, when he went to Miami, how many fans he actually has that are just fans of him. There are so many people. I think Tony Jefferson is one of them on Twitter, the former Cardinal safety, who's like, I ride with LeBron wherever he goes, whatever.
Yeah,
like, I'm going with him to LA, let's do this. Like, I don't
Tony Jefferson also rides with the Suns.
Tony Jefferson rides with the Suns, but he was like, the Lakers, really? It's like, whatever, I ride with LeBron, I'm going where he goes. That's a real thing. So those three together, it's gonna be, I'm not meaning to insult Suns fans or anything, but I've seen the turnouts the past couple of years. Yeah. And the Lakers, dude, the fans, the amount of LeBron jerseys, it's going to be insane.
After that, we wanted to talk about, kind of circle back, I wrote a column. Basically, the Suns are putting all of their eggs in the draft basket. And I made this crazy flow chart, which we haven't really addressed on the podcast because I think it just came between some stuff. I don't know how to make a flowchart, man, but I tried.
It was fine.
I found a free online program, and I tried to trace back, and I tried to start with, all right, the 2015 point guard trades on trade deadline day, and I just tried to take all the pieces that were pretty significant in that and connect them and see what they've turned into, and I had to include the Steve Nash trade because of that Lakers pick that has gone around and around and then ended back up, and the Suns got Mikal Bridges. And so basically what all that nonsense, if you want to look at it, it was a couple of weeks ago, something about eggs in a basket in the draft, if you want to Google search it, is the Suns are banking on Marquese Chris, on Mikal Bridges, and that's, and Brandon Knight, basically, like, his health. And they've given up and churned so many roster or guys on the roster and draft picks into just those three guys. The only thing remaining left to be seen in that is the next Miami pick. and that's obviously gone. So, yeah. Oh, there's the Bucks pick. I mean, the Miami pick is gone. So, through all that, it's basically like Ryan McDonough's acquired assets. He's sold a lot of those assets, and his job is basically, and his success, not even his job. He could be gone. He could be fired at the end of his contract, and these guys just aren't ready to go yet. And if Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges and Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton all play, pan out and end up to be like starting caliber players and above, then he will have been successful. But real problem for him is obviously timing that. And yeah, that's basically where we are. And it, I feel like it's not going to happen in the next 2 years. That's maybe negative, but I think it's realistic. And I, again, it's realistic to say they could turn out to be pretty darn good players, at least a couple of these guys. And I can throw Bender and Chris in there and say they could end up panning out, but it's not going to be soon enough. So whole point in that is Ryan McDonough's rolling with his draft picks, unless who's going to go on the market? Damian Lillard, if people keep talking about the Blazers blowing it up, but other than that, I don't see what happens.
First of all, I thought it was a great flowchart. Give yourself more credit. You basically, if you didn't see it, basically broke it down to four sections. It was the Nash trade and everything that came after that. It was the Knight trade kind of mixed in there somewhere. There was the Dragic trade, and then there was a bottom right corner where like the Hakeem Warren Robin Lopez stuff was kind of mixed in there. And that's just the reality of how many moves they've made and how many assets they've moved along the way. The Chris trade is in there. The
IT trade, yeah.
The Zaire Smith trade is in there. The Isaiah Thomas trade when they got him is in there. It's all over the place because there's that many moving parts for what they've done. But where they have landed, and essentially your point that you just went over, is for now, the Suns have decided they are building through the draft. When they decided not to trade Josh Jackson for Kyrie Irving, as reported, they made that decision. They're going to continue making that decision until, I believe, the right deal comes about. If they get a high-quality point guard or power forward or small forward in one of those three spots, because I think we can agree that like Ayton and Booker aren't going anywhere for at least a couple of years, they will make that move. It's not like they're fully committed to this idea. But at the same time, they're making the biggest gamble in the league right now, which some teams just have to do by default. Just look at Sacramento. When's the last time they were good? And Minnesota to a certain extent as well. When was the last time they were good? But then they got Karl-Anthony Towns, and then they get Jimmy Butler, and it can turn in your favor. But then you can also be Sacramento where it doesn't turn in your favor.
And arguably, for Minnesota, for example, it's not in their favor because they're, what? They hardly make the playoffs. I saw Jerry Zagota, their longtime beat reporter, was like, I'm retiring after 15 years, or maybe it was 11 years. They've made the playoff once. Like,
There are members in their front office. This is not me like reporting anything. I don't know anyone in the Timberwolves front office, but I guarantee there are people in the Timberwolves front office who want everything built around Karl-Anthony Towns, but at the same time, they supported moves like getting Tom Thibodeau as their coach and letting him run stuff, and then getting Jeff Teague and getting Jimmy Butler, and some of that has reportedly made Karl-Anthony Towns upset. And there are people in front office that are like, dude, let's just make him happy. Like, let's stop this stuff. And that's just trials and tribulations of it along the way. I kind of wanted to start our discussion here by illustrating how difficult this has been already. Not even by virtue of picking the right guy. Sometimes it just comes down to the luck of where you pick. Because if you look at someone, if someone wants to make a video project and they're bored this offseason, look at all the near wins that the Suns had in the 2016 season and how they came about the 2015-16 season, because the first three picks before Dragan Bender, Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, and Jaylen Brown, it would be really nice to have one of those three guys right now. Instead, they have Dragan Bender, and they were fourth in lottery odds before that draft. Before the draft lottery, they stuck at four. What if they would have stuck at three or stuck at two? Maybe they move up to one and get Ben Simmons. There's a lot of variables there. And of course, you guys are going to say, well, Jaylen Brown landed in Boston, perfect situation. Ben Simmons, perfect situation, whatever. It would be a lot better than having Dragan Bender right now. And then, of course, they see their opportunity to trade up for Marquese Chriss at eight. They go get their guy because they clearly felt that way by trading up for him. Jamal Murray goes one pick beforehand. Boy, it would be nice to have a guy like that right now at point guard. You even look one pick later. A guy like Jakob Poeltl, I think, is going to surprise a lot of people on the Spurs with how solid and all-around of a center he is. Two picks later, Domantas Sabonis is there, another guy who is a starting-caliber center in this league. Torian Prince is a starting-caliber wing and fits everything in the direction the NBA is going. That was one pick later. And then it's like Papagiannis and Valentine, and that's kind of ugly. But that's just the 2016 draft, just to illustrate with what the Suns have. They didn't really have a choice here is what we're saying. We don't agree or disagree with whatever decisions they're making. We're just saying that there's so many different variables that go on here besides Bender and Chris underachieving.
Yeah, and that's pivotal. Like, that draft was pivotal because it's two of them. Like, that's pretty much what it comes down to. And it wasn't the best draft, obviously, in that area. And, I mean, if you want to criticize them for their Earl Watson thing. Like, that's more than a wasted year of development. That's, you're trying to create this team with character and, like, friendships that, like, wasn't NBA talent. Like, Tyler Ulis and Alan Williams don't have teams right now. Alan Williams very well could latch on, I think, because he has an NBA skill in rebounding, but it's just like, man, that year, I think, is the most painful. And it's Bender and Chris obviously are part of that, but like, look, Chris came back this past his sophomore year and he was overweight. Do I blame him for that? Partially, but I was a college kid and I know I wasn't a pro athlete, but I can understand how you could make, like, that's not the end of the world mistake. He's not a bad kid for doing that. That's just being a kid, I think, and he's learned from it, you would hope. But if you're Earl Watson and you're apparently that close, like, and you see that happening under what you're supposed to be the leader, why did that happen in the first place is how I'm viewing it when the players wanted to keep him. So I think, yeah, I'm passing the buck off McDonough a bit, but, well, no, I'm not, because he hired Earl Watson, I guess.
So the draft before this was Devin Booker.
Yeah.
But this is the point now where it actually kind of, okay, we're building around this guy. They saw my theory that I've been growing a lot in the past couple of months is that the Suns are always a year ahead of us because they're seeing so much more stuff than us, practices and how guys act behind the scenes and everything. I'm sure by the end of Booker's rookie year, they were like, this is our guy. I think they already knew to a certain extent. And then by the end of year two, surely they knew. So the start of this is really in 2016 when he's a year into his year, or a year into his career. So then you start with this draft, this horrible draft, Bender and Chris, and then the next year you hire Earl Watson before you even draft like Josh Jackson. He's already in the interim and already has the player support and everything. So that's just really a disastrous start to and it's kind of honestly not a miracle, but it's honestly really good fortune how the past 2 years have gone for them. We are both pretty undecided on Josh Jackson, but actually I don't want to go that far yet because to illustrate that point further on this draft, the two guys after Dragan Bender, which a lot of people are probably yelling at me and saying, well, it wasn't that easy. Minnesota took Chris Dunn. He's gone. A fascinating what if in the draft and just showing how hard this can be. New Orleans takes Buddy Hield at 6. If they take Jamal Murray there, and Jamal Murray goes 7, Buddy Hield goes 6. If they take Jamal Murray at 6, I don't think they ever trade Jamal Murray in a boogie trade. So they keep Jamal Murray, and now they have Jamal Murray with Anthony Davis instead of having to sign Elfrid Payton to be their starting point guard this year. Like, that's kind of a fascinating sort of what if. We never get that amazing Rondo playoff run, of course, at the same time. But you look at their backcourt right now and you look at everyone outside of Davis and Mirotic and they have Randall now. You're looking for other pieces, wings, guards. Drew Holiday, of course, is there too. But Holiday and Murray together instead of Holiday and Hield or
Elfrid.
Yeah, Elfrid and Rondo. That's how much one draft can change. Because if they have Jamal Murray and Holiday as their backcourt with Anthony Davis, that's a legitimate big three. They're for sure making the playoffs this year. And they're on the outside looking in right now, I think, even with Anthony Davis, who's maybe a top one, top two MVP candidate going into next year.
I think ESPN even had the Lakers outside. Like, and they've drafted pretty well. But yeah, point is, drafting's hard. And even if you have, what, I have to count on my hand how many the draft picks, first round lottery picks the Suns have had, it's still hard.
Look at 2017. They draft Josh Jackson after Jason Tatum and Lonzo Ball are off the board. I think we can safely say Jason Tatum is going to be one of the best young players in the league for the next couple of years and has a really good chance of being an all-star for a really long time without
getting... I will throw this out there. What if they somehow got the third pick and drafted Jason Tatum and had Earl Watson? Would Jason Tatum be viewed that way? I don't know.
Yeah, that's another thing. But Lonzo Ball at two certainly has his faults right now with his shooting percentages and everything, but at the same time was really good on defense as a rookie and still put up the numbers with the assists and the rebounds and proved that he can be a productive NBA point guard in terms of being like more of an off-ball option, a starting point guard. Josh Jackson, we don't know yet. I know a lot of people listening are super high on Josh Jackson still, but it's easy to forget the Suns were at two in that lottery. They dropped to four. How much should their fortunes change 3 years from now if they have Lonzo Ball or Jason Tatum instead of Josh Jackson? Because so many things would change, so they obviously wouldn't wind up with Mikal Bridges in that standpoint. But the thing I wrote in the Booker thing to kind of prove how poor the guys were around him were he started one game with TJ Warren. In parentheses, I put, the team just drafted Josh Jackson, Mikal Bridges back-to-back years at TJ Warren's position. And yes, they're compiling wings, but at the same time, there's just a little bit of doubt there. That draft. Lowry goes seven. It's like if Josh Jackson just turns out to be average, there's going to be a lot of guys. We obviously haven't even gotten to Donovan Mitchell yet. Of course, those guys weren't in consideration at four. But you just got to... If they don't hit on Josh, that was our whole point a year ago, was they have to hit on the 2017 draft. They won't have to hit on the 2018 draft, and they'll be fine.
Is there a way, yeah, like this past draft, we don't know yet, but let's just say that's pretty safe. Like he's a starting center. I don't know.
DeAndre Ayton. Yeah, we're talking about the 2018 draft now.
We can go on that. That's another thing to talk about, is like how depressed the center market is.
Well, that's another one where there was a legitimate debate between Doncic and Ayton. There are a lot of people who feel like Luka Doncic is the best player in this class. I am one of them. There are several people with me. I'm not just a lunatic by myself. There was even a small contingent of people who believed that Jaren Jackson Jr. is a better center prospect than DeAndre Ayton. That existed. There were people that said, if you're taking a center at one, you should take Jaren Jackson Jr. So that's something where you're looking at them getting picked 3-4. You look back now, we're 2-3 years in the future. Is that something where they made the wrong choice? Speaking of wrong choices, Atlanta trading Luka Doncic or Trae Young. That's one that is going to be fascinating to watch and probably won't lean in their favor. And then Mikal Bridges is going to be the same Marquese Chriss thing. It's like you traded up for this guy. You gave up real assets to get this guy. He better be good.
Elite 3-and-D man with ball handling capabilities.
He should at least be an above average perimeter defender and a above average shooter, or else it's a massive failure.
Right.
With selecting him. And that's the whole point, is that they can't afford massive failures in this draft or the previous draft. How soon do you think, is it just the right name coming up when they start considering trading some of these guys that aren't named Ayton and Booker?
Yeah. I mean, you look... Do you feel... Okay, let's frame it this way, maybe. There were Suns attachments to Kyrie, to Kristaps Porzingis. Who else? Am I missing someone? I feel like every time a young player's name comes up, obviously the Suns were in it the last few years. And now I think they would have to be more serious about pulling the trigger on that. Because I think the pressure's on. And it's not bad necessarily, because like obviously you can't trade the 2018 pick with... It doesn't have as much value until you know you have the first overall pick. And there wasn't really anything other than Kawhi this summer that you could have said the Suns need to trade this. And maybe Carl Anthony Towns, but I don't think that was really something Minnesota wanted to do. So I think now that Ayton's not bad, because I think he still has a lot of value. So if someone came along and was like, I want him or I want Josh Jackson, because that's, you're going to have to give up one of those guys. Like, who else are you going to trade if you want to keep Booker? Right.
Yeah, when people were tossing around Kawhi Leonard offers that didn't include Josh Jackson, they were out of their mind.
Right. And that's making a huge assumption that other teams don't completely like that. Some team would have to have a lot of faith in him. Ayton's easier to sell if you can sell it to a team like the Spurs, for example. If they had retained Kawhi and this pushed on, maybe. But yeah, I think the Suns have to be more willing to be like, okay, well, listen, bring in a third team and give us more assets for the future so we can at least stock this roster around Star X and Devin Booker.
I think there's an important distinction. I don't disagree with your overall point, but when we bring up the Kristaps and the Kyrie thing, both of those trades, it was like, we're not giving up any of our top assets, but we want to see what's going on here.
Yeah.
They didn't want to give up the Josh Jackson pick and Kristaps. It's not really clear where that went. It sounds like they weren't willing to include any real picks of value, and they were kind of looking at Bender and Chris, and then the Knicks reportedly said, how about Devin Booker? And then it probably stopped there. When does the shift change to Damian Lillard's available? Okay, you can have Josh Jackson and our unprotected pick next year. Let's get this done right now. When does that shift happen? When is it, okay, you don't want Josh? How about Mikhail, Drogon, TJ, two picks in the future? Like, when does that not, it's not even aggressive, because we've been talking about they want to be aggressive. They should be aggressive this offseason. We're expecting them to be aggressive. It's a philosophy change.
I think that happens now, yeah. That's what I was trying to say.
And it's like, does it happen now? Do you overpay free agents now? Does the Paul Millsap, Blake Griffin type of signing happen next offseason? It's, when does that philosophy change happen? Because building through the draft can only get you so far unless you're just extremely, extremely lucky. And people point at the examples all the time. OKC, Golden State, yada, yada. Those happen twice a decade, maybe. The teams build a contender through the draft only. It just really never happens. And even then, can you argue? I guess you can't argue, but if Golden State doesn't have Andre Iguodala, if Andre Iguodala just was on a long-term contract with someone else, are they winning titles? It twists in a bunch of different ways. Then OKC, of course, never even got a title with those guys.
Right.
And you can look back at other young cores and say, oh, well, these guys were together at a certain point, but they didn't get to the finish line with it because certain changes have to be made at a certain point.
Yeah.
And that's where I just look at this team and I wonder, when is that change actually going to happen? Because before it was like, yes, they should be always going after these big names. But when is it more than that? When is it just putting your foot down and saying, we're getting this guy? You're not leaving. We're not taking you off the phone until we get this deal done for Damian Lillard. We'll give you literally whatever you want outside of Ayton Booker. What do you want? That's the point in negotiations where I expect them to eventually get, by virtue of what we just talked about. Because if you hit on Drogon, Bender and Marquese Chris or those two picks, maybe you don't have to be this way necessarily.
Yeah.
If Josh Jackson looked like Jason Tatum last year, we wouldn't have to really talk about it like this. But because Boston can just sit back and be like, whatever, man.
We have 11 NBA starting caliber players.
We can make the finals right now, and we have a big two at least of Jalen and Jason that we're not going to let go for any reason, because we can keep making the playoffs with those guys at least, let alone winning more Eastern Conference titles and potentially finals in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think to your point, though, obviously you have to, I think you get through training camp. There's no trades now. You see, like, that's one thing about the Suns is I don't think they've learned how to, like, did they know that Eric Bledsoe was, like, going to go rogue on them? They should have. I felt like it was kind of written in just, like, how we viewed his time. Like, it's not working out. They have all these other point guards who are not winning. Like, when do you trade him? And then it finally just bubbled up and became him going to a hair salon. So, like, they need to be able to read guys in the locker room, who's the dude who's going to be, like, Booker. You can see he's, like, a pro. He's trying to get better. It's not just, like, a game to him. He's getting better. Like, some of these guys have yet to do that. So you put your mark on them. You say, this is our couple guys we love. And yeah, you got to be aggressive and entertain trades, because the other thing about the Suns, and we talk about this all the time, is like, next free agency period, I don't know, every other team's going to have money. There are a lot of stars out there. The Suns, like, will be better off, and I think it's a lot safer bet to, if you put money down on how they get another star alongside Booker and Ayton, it's trade. It's not free agency.
I don't want people to misinterpret what we're talking about either. We're not saying they need to make moves now, make moves this season. It's just, when does that shift occur? When do you, the age-old debate on Twitter with fake trades especially is always potential versus what a guy is now. And the bottom line is, no one can accurately predict what Josh Jackson's going to be in 3 to 5 years. No one can accurately predict what Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss are, even Booker or Ayton. And Booker, we have a ton of intel on now with 3 years in. We can tell that he's probably going to be an all-star two guard at some point. But how great is he actually going to be? We don't know. I'm not saying they should trade him at all. We just talked about for 5 minutes how they're not going to trade him or Ayton anytime soon. But when does that wall hit for them in terms of looking at potential and looking at value, and they just go get the proven guy?
And you don't know when that proven guy is going to hit the market.
Yeah. So. Like, if Dame becomes available at this year's trade deadline, do they go for it? Because they're certainly, I mean, with Dame, Booker, Ayton, is that even a playoff team in the West? I'm not exactly sure. But do you go for it anyway? Do you give up Josh Jackson for that anyway?
And then you go into free agency and be like, all right, yeah, you can have all the stars. We got our stars. We're going to get complimentary role players. Yeah.
That was a no way like 2 years ago, that type of value discussion. I know they didn't have Josh Jackson 2 years ago, but that sort of unprotected first round pick that's going to be in the top five for Damian Lillard, like you would never entertain that. But now you're entertaining that, and you're not only seriously considering it, you're probably doing it.
Yeah.
And that's because of what we just talked about for 15 minutes, which is they built through the draft. At a certain point, they're going to hit the wall. It's not going to develop. I'm confident in saying this is not going to be a Curry, Thompson, Draymond, those three. It's not going to be those three guys developing like that. There are Suns fans who are going to think I'm full of it, and they think Ayton, Booker, Jackson is going to be just as good as those guys, if not better. By all means, think like that. I appreciate the optimism. But most guys aren't going to develop like that, and it's going to be about Ayton and Booker being the one and two, and who they can find to put around them to be the third guy, and more likely a proven veteran.
Yeah, if you want to be positive, Josh Jackson comes out this year and looks 20 times better than he did in Summer League, and then you're feeling a lot better about
Summer League in the first half of last season. It wasn't just Summer League that raised off alarms. And even when he was playing well, there was stuff we talked about all the time that we were a little bit concerned about.
Oh, let's see. Final thoughts, topics. There's not much going on.
No, there's not really much going on. We just thought this is something we kind of glossed over, like Kevin said. Thought it was an interesting thing to talk about. Thought it was fun to talk about, because that discussion is going to come up again whenever trade rumors come up, and we're going to have it again. And this is kind of to preface that discussion and say, we agree that there is a shift in philosophy coming pretty soon, despite them just winning 21 games and probably winning under 35 this year.
Let's see. Yep. 2 months out from the season, plus a week. Training camp will start up soon. In the meantime, we'll keep pumping out podcasts. Check us out on ArizonaSports.com, the Arizona Sports app, and iTunes, and wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening.